Accession number 33623. Reel 3.
Buzzer King Reel 3. So you mentioned, obviously, a little bit about what you would eat. Was there any other favourites?
Well, we had, we did have cereal. There was, I used to have cereal, and we had always had plenty of condensed milk. And I used to have pork condensed milk on the cereal and scoff that down. But feeding was always difficult. If you're in two watches, 4 hours on, 4 hours off, you ain't got a great deal of time to prepare food. You've got to get your head down. But we did. We managed. We used to have the pot mess. We used to have the occasional roast. We have a great lump of meat from the naffy. Peel some potatoes on the mess deck. You know, have to get water to peel the potatoes. You've got to empty the water afterwards. You peel the potatoes. You have a tin tray and you pile your meat in, your potatoes and whatever else you happen to have, and you take it up to the galley where you had a chef. Well, we won't call him a chef. He was, I don't know what he was. I think his real occupation in life was fucking married women. That was his occupation. He just wasn't really into chefing, but he used to put these trays into the oven. And so eventually, you know, we would, other messes would put their trays in, and we had a bit of stick with mess 3 on it, which we had in our tray, and then we would take it down. But we didn't have roast very often. Mostly it was pot mess. We lived on pot mess. Sometimes we'd have cold, you know, we'd have corned beef sandwiches or something like that. But on the Russian runs, it became particularly difficult, because when action stations are sounded, you're on duty all the time. There's no free time. So you're on duty the whole time. And this could go on for hours and hours and hours.
So how would you feed yourself?
You don't sleep. You don't feed. You just do what you do. You're on the radio room or in the HFDF office continually. Then eventually action stations is finished, so you go and, you know, you'd go and get some food. But on the Russian runs, I mean, it was very difficult. You're thinking about 10 days there and 10 days back. Well, you load up with bread when you leave port. After about 6 days, the bread's doing's manky. But many a time, when it's been, what I used to do, I used to get potatoes, and I would put my oilskin on, put some potatoes in my oilskin pocket, take it up to the galley, and stick it in the oven. That's providing the sea hadn't put the galley fires out. If the sea had put the galley fires out, you were buggered. There was nothing. But then I would, after a time, I'd go up to the galley and get my baked potatoes. I'd have to stuff them in my pocket because I couldn't carry it. It was so rough, probably, that you couldn't carry it. You'd have to hold the guard rail to get back to the mess. So you'd get back to the mess soaking wet with your pockets full of hot potato, and you'd slam that on the office, on the mess table. No tablecloths. You just put it on the table. Cut it open. Got some butter. Slam some butter on it, and you chomped it. You got your bread, and you cut a slice of bread. You cut the green out of the middle, and you had some jam, and you put some jam on the crust, and you had crust and jam with your baked potato.
And what would you be able to drink?
Well, we had tea. We had quite a kettle, and you chuck some tea in and some ideal milk, and we went up onto the galley, and we got some hot water and made tea that way. But I think we made tea quite a bit, actually. But there was.
Would you use that to try and keep you going, the tea?
I don't think you ever. You don't think like that. You don't think like to keep you going. You're just doing it. It just comes naturally to you. You know, these are the conditions. You accept them. Get on with it. You've also got to remember that you can't wash. You ever tried washing in seawater? No fresh water, unless you went up onto the upper deck to the faucet and got boiling hot water from the boiler room and bring that back to the heads and have a wash. But do you want to wash when it's freezing cold? You don't wash.
Can you describe to me your mess area? You know, what the mess was like?
Well, it was quite simple. It was, if you know what the shape of the ship is, there was a mess table on the left, on the port side for us, and the same on the starboard side. Along the side of the ship were lockers. On top of the lockers, on the lids, were black cushions where you had a kip if you didn't want to hang your hammock. That was another thing. That was a joy. When we were at Skegness, slinging a hammock. There's an art in slinging a hammock. You put it up between two hooks. And the thing is, you've got to get it as tight as possible. Then the chiefy tells you how to put the hitch in. So you get the rope and you put it over and pull it through. So it's tight. If you want to release it, pull it and you release the hammock. But you've got to get it tight. Then you've got to have a stretcher to pull the clues apart, otherwise you can't get in. So you lay your blanket in and you drop it down so the blanket hangs either side of the hammock, and then there's a getting in. You have never seen such a kerfuffle in all your life. Are these blokes trying to get in? They haven't got any strength. This is at Royal Arthur. And they haven't got the strength to get in the hammock. They're holding it, they're trying to heave themselves up. And they got in and some of them rolled out and fell on the floor. It was hilarious. I've never had so much fun in all my life. I never found probably any difficulty. In point of fact, I love sleeping in a hammock. And even now, I would like to sleep in a hammock again.
What's the technique then to get into it?
Well, you just get in and drop yourself in. And you're in. But you see, you can't really turn left and right. You've got to lie pretty doings. You've got to, if you're lucky, I did. I always had a cushion for my head. And I pull the blankets out. And it was easy. Eventually you could hop in and out, no problem. Well, you had to. Because when you're on watch, you get in the middle. You've got the middle watch, 12 to midnight. You know, there's no chance of getting a kip before 12 o'clock. You know, you get it, you do your 4 hours, then you can have a kip. So there's no real set time, really, for eating. You eat when you can. That's the whole point. It's not like the Navy today when you pop down the canteen and a chef does all the food for you. And I mean, it's a lap of luxury today, it's a doddle. It's not like it might. Then, you can imagine 32 blokes crammed into the forward mess. It stinks. You stink. You go up to the heads and you know to use the toilet. You can't wash. You're filthy. And there's the condensation and the water. And the first time I went to see, when I joined the Caprice, the ship had just been commissioned and we were doing sea trials. That is, everything has to be tested. Guns, the ship itself, everything is tested, including us, when everybody has to know their position and what to do. And carry on. So there has to be a time when the crew is tested. So the skipper took us out into the Irish Sea in a force 10 gale. Now, if you've ever been on a small ship on a force 10 gale with a beam sea running, the ship, if you're in the radio room, you're sat in your armchair like this one, the ship is falling down into the trough. When it falls down, you jars your whole body. Everything jars, you're shaking. It comes up, you leave the chair as you come up. The beam sea is running, so the ship is skewing down, and this goes on. And this goes on for hours and hours and hours. You can't sleep. And eventually, after about a day, I was in the radio room, and I could feel this horrible, if you've ever fainted, this horrible feeling that comes across you. Your face feels cold, your head aches, you sweat, you feel absolutely dreadful. You know, you want to die. And I knew I was going to vomit, and I was in the radio room, and I went out of the deadlight door into the galley flat. The galley flat was running with water because the sea was running heavy, and the blokes were coming off the upper deck in their oil skins, soaking wet, which didn't help matters. And I got out, and I got behind the bridge wings bulkhead, and I crouched down, and it was raining, I was cold. It was wet, and this heavy sea was running, and I could see the white horses on the top of the waves, and I felt absolutely dreadful. And eventually, I struggled to the guardrail, and I vomited. And I thought at that moment, "Oh, Mum, can I come home and sit in front of the fire and have my porridge?" After that, I was never sick again. That was the first and only time, and even now, when I go, if I go on cruises and that, I'm never sick. And I've never been sick again. And so we got used to it. And it's like everything else. You know what you do with your duties. You get used to your duties. You know how your mates are. You rely on your comrades. It's comradeships. You go ashore with them. And everybody knows their place. And everybody works to do that routine.
Is it important then in your mess that everybody rubs along together, that they get on?
You haven't got any choice. You haven't got any choice. You've got to rub along together. There's no question of anybody. We had one chap that wouldn't wash. He came from Gateshead. We told him, you know, get up to the heads and get washed. Well, he wouldn't. So we took him up and we stripped him and we got yard brooms and we scrubbed the bugger. He washed after that. But that's how it was. And I mean, I was an only child, mollycoddled. All this was completely strange to me. It was like another life. It was something that I'd never known. But and one of the things, we did a lot of, on the Caprice, we were based either in Glasgow or Liverpool. We did a lot of convoy duties. We used to go out to cross the Atlantic and meet the Queen Mary coming in from the States. And that was always interesting, really, because as we approached Scotland, the skipper, we used to do execute. It's quite easy, actually. The leading ship transmit an execute signal to the radio room. You pick up the telephone to the bridge, execute. And at that time, if you're both... both ships are forward. right up close to the in front of the Queen Mary, and you do a complete turn, and you come up right behind the Queen Mary as close as possible. Now the tunnel is going with the bagpipes on both ships, and you're coming up right close to the ship, and the Americans are tossing down stuff to you. And it it was exciting. It was.
So you'd initially then started with the working up the sea trials with the ship, because she was new.
Yeah.
And did you start on the Atlantic escort duties? Was that the first thing that you did?
I can't remember. Now I know we did. We did one exercise. You had to do exercises, and we went down the western approaches to the Isle of Mull, and we anchored in Mull, right near the town. And the skipper said, "Well, Max Kennedy Horton, who's the admiral, is coming aboard. We're going to have an exercise. We're going to go into action stations." So this chappy comes on board. You see, we're all keyed up, you know, ready to go. And because it didn't apply to us really in the radio room, because it all applies to the seamen and all the gunners and what have you. So you can watch. So Admiral comes on, and Max Horton, and he starts flinging smoke bombs about, you know, all this sort of thing. And eventually, it's action stations, you see, and the everybody gets up. All the gun layers are there, you know, the guns are moving, and the chaps are running about, and the chaps are loading depth charges into the throwers. Down the stern of the ship, we have depth charges on a roller that you roll off the stern of the ship. So there was some poor little bugger there, you see, and all this excitement was going on, and then the gunnery officer said, "Fire!" And this little poor little bugger pulled this lever and dropped this depth charge off the stern. He came down, "You daft bugger," he said, "you drunny," "you'll pay for that, bugger. That'll be sixpence a week, your pay." We were up anchor and away. And I often wonder now when I see cruise ships anchoring up in Tobermory whether that depth charge is still down. I wonder if it'll go off one of these days. But I mean, that was part of it, but mostly it was escort duties. We escort the emperors of Australia out to the States, taking war brides back. You know,
would you go a certain distance out then?
Yeah, about 50% of the way across, out of new boat range, really.
Can I ask a little bit about other aspects of obviously on board life? Were you, because you were 18, so were you entitled to the rum ration?
I didn't take it. I had the threepence a day instead.
So how did that rum ration work then?
Well, at 12 o'clock, it was up pipes. The chief here would come along with a kettle of rum, and the ration was 3-in-1. So you had one part rum, two parts water, and you would get your ration. Well, there was chiefy had a scoop, and if he was a clever bugger, he put his thumb in the scoop like that. So in point of fact, he had a thumbful of rum, and you got less, your ration was less his thumbful. Well, you had your ration. I mean, that was 1944, something like that. Well, in those days, it was all right to have a rum ration. It was finished later on. I mean, it was all, having a rum ration is all right for pulling ropes and heaving. But when things became more technical and more technical equipment, you couldn't have blokes three sheets in the wind operating that, so it was discontinued.
And was it used as a sort of bargaining tool amongst those who took it?
Yeah, it was. It was, you could go along, a chap would say, come along to my mess and have sippers. So he would have a sipper and see of his rum. If you'd done him a real favour, you could have two sippers. And if you had, if you were a real favour, you had gulpers. Two sippers, one gulper. Two gulpers, one downer. You had the lot. Now, if you had your rum, and you had his rum as well, and navy rum is navy rum, it's not this stuff you buy in the, over the bar. And so you imagine, I mean, you're three sheets in the wind. That's what I say, you know, pulling ropes, yeah. Putting sails up, great. But not operating computer equipment or high frequency direction finders.
So they would, use it, would they then, to say, what, take my duty, or could you do that sort of thing?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Any little favour you would do, you know, give him his fags or, I don't know, any little duty. But you see, then there was, you see, the old bosun who got his thumb in the rum, they used to put that in a bottle and add raisins. And then that would leave that. And after a time, that become more and more potent. When we, on the Caprice, we had a bosun called Bishop. He was a signal chiefy, and he used to say, if he was a bit of a lad really, and we, you know, we're all chummy, and he used to say, come down the mess, he said, and have a drop of my rum. And the chaps, those that wanted to, I never used to go, so I was not a drinker. And they'd go down to his mess, and they'd get absolutely bloody blackguard, you know, roll about the mess and that, on this bottles of very potent rum. I was never into that, actually. Not that I don't dislike a drink now, because I do.
And I was thinking, did you have time to do things like make a mend? Would that be something that you could do? I'm thinking, oh, obviously, yeah, not when you're on active convoy duty, but in
when you're in harbour, yeah, you get what we call make a mend. Half a day. You would get half a day for doing what you're sewing, because you're issued with a huzzif. And that's got needles and thread and cotton and all bits and pieces, you know, buttons and what have you. So if you've got a problem, you do it. I mean, some of the blokes, I mean, all sailors are vain. They are vain. Take a blue collar. When you're issued with a blue collar, can't have a dark blue colour like that. Get a bath, put some water in, some peroxide, douse it until it goes up blue. So there you've got a blue collar, right? Bell bottoms, undo the seam, put some pennies in the bottom so that the bell bottoms swing properly. You know, going ashore, you want to be Jack the Lad. And you were Jack the Lad, believe you me.
And your working routine, was it divided between the direction office and the Toulon?
When we were in port, we were in when we were just cruising around, you know, the western approaches, at we'd take a turn in the radio room and give the lads a rest, you see. But the moment we went to sea proper, when we were in anywhere near there was likely to be any enemy action, we were in the HFDF office. So the three of us took it in turns, you see, four hours on, 4 hours off, as I've explained.
And that essentially is your action station, and
that's it. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned a little bit about the clothing that you wore. But when at sea, what did you wear?
Oh, we just wore overalls. overalls. Well, you wore a pair of pants, overalls, and a heavy sea jersey with your overalls on top. I mean, I never wore a uniform on board. Never.
And that was the case across the board, was it?
Except if you're entering harbour. Men of the day off the upper deck. Men not in the rig of the day off the upper deck. And so you were. If you wanted to be on the upper deck, you had to be in uniform.
But there was no
You didn't have to wear a cap. You had to be, you know, in a jacket and bell bottoms. You didn't have to have all the gear on, but.
But at sea, there was no uniform discipline.
No. You could wear what you like. I used to wear civvies up on board. I used to have a civvy shirt.
And were you in a division on board the ship?
What do you mean?
I was thinking of was there an officer in control of the telegraphists or?
Never saw him. We had a petty officer tell, and he was the one we turned to.
And was he there for any problems that you might have?
Yeah. If you got a problem, he was there. If you got in the radio room, we had two transmitters. We had a British transmitter, a Marconi, and we had, behind us, we had an American transmitter as a backup. The British transmitter was a sod. You had to nurse it along. You could actually nurse it along, because it was bloody awful. Switch to the American, and it was like dancing. You could burst it along. The American equipment was far superior to the British. Far superior. Not in the same league.
And when you're transmitting, I mean, I take it there is a real discipline to how messages are transmitted from on board a ship.
Oh, there's a routine, yes, you must adhere to.
And what is the routine then that you work?
I can't remember now. I mean, there was I've forgotten how we called them. We called the ships now. I can't remember now. But you did, and there was a signal for signing off. I think it was AR, but that was it. I mean, this all came in the training.
But I take it that transmissions were kept to a relative minimum where they were, you're on.
You didn't transmit at sea. Never. I mean, you didn't have lights at sea. You had lights inside the ship, but outside the ship, there was a red light, just enough to see by, because you can't see red any distance.